It's my pleasure to introduce to you our next presenter, Dr. Dina Chisholm. Dr. Chisholm is an assistant professor of pediatrics and public health at The Ohio State University and a principal investigator in the Center for Innovation in Pediatric Practice in the Research Institute at Nationwide Children's Hospital. She has over 25 peer-reviewed papers in areas including health information technology, health disparities, and behavioral health, and is currently the principal investigator on grants funded by NIDA and NICHD. Dr. Chisholm's current research projects focus on the use of technology and other interventions to improve the engagement of at-risk adolescents and their families in health management and health care. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Dina Chisholm. Dina?
Thank you, and good morning. Tracy stole that bio offline, and it's about 5 years old. So, okay. Actually, I'm an associate professor now, which is kind of cool.
Oh, congratulations.
But anyway, so the panel before me has done a great job of outlining the program from an organizational level and from a national level. And what I get to do is to talk to you about how we made it work on the ground in one specific local community and in one specific chapter, and how we took the pieces and parts that were developed and tailored them to the needs of the population that we were working with in Columbus, Ohio. So I have no relationships to disclose. Columbus, Ohio is a urban Midwestern city located in Franklin County. And asthma affects about 15% of our population, which is pretty consistent with what you would expect in a city that size. We also know that in our population, we have significant socioeconomic and racial disparities associated with asthma, including double the prevalence of asthma in our African-American children and also double the prevalence in our low-income children. The biggest frustration about all of this is that much of the morbidity and the expenses of asthma can be controlled through behavioral and medication management. The thing that got me really excited about this project, as I learned about it from Dr. Adams as it was being rolled out, was that I am personally a person who has dealt with asthma from the time I was about 3 years old. So I spent a whole large chunk of my childhood in hospitals and in emergency rooms and in intensive care units and missing days of school and not being able to go out and play with the other kids, because when I was a kid, we didn't have a lot of the great medications that are out there now to control it. And to know that kids today who are going through the same stuff I went to don't have to made me really want to make a difference in those kids' lives, and that's why I was excited about leading this project in our community. So our local response to the asthma problem in Franklin County and to engage the Asthma Prevention and Management Program was an asthma parent mentor program. So we worked with an evidence-based process, a community intervention linking our local chapter, Alpha Sigma Omega, of Alpha Kappa Alpha, with other community partners and with families, in a way that we interacted with the parents and the children on a regular basis to provide education, to provide self-management support, to provide self-efficacy support, and to link families with resources particularly available at Nationwide Children's Hospital. So Nationwide Children's Hospital is where I work. It's kind of, I wear a lot of hats, we all do. As a faculty member in the Department of Pediatrics at The Ohio State University, all of our pediatrics faculty are actually housed at Nationwide Children's Hospital, also in Columbus, which has over 1 million visits a year, over 18,000 inpatient admissions, one of the top 10 children's hospitals in the country, and U.S. News and World Report honor roll place. We're also a major research center, one of the top 10 funded pediatric research centers in the country. So this was a great place to be, to have an opportunity to pull together a great historical community service organization and a great clinical service provider. One of the important things was that Children's Hospital had already started thinking about asthma, because just like all healthcare systems, we knew that that was a major source of our admissions, a major source of our emergency department use, a major cost to our managed care plan that we operate as a hospital. So really wanting to improve quality of care for asthma was something that was already on everybody's radar screen. And this is a lot of stuff, but our hospital's quality improvement team had already put together a care map to start identifying where are the opportunities for us to improve care in this population. And one of the things they had already put on their map, which I was excited about, was this very bottom part that I had in circles, which talks about the physician activates the patient in their care by education and monitoring, and the patient manages their home regimen. And you see in parentheses, it may be hard to earn quotation marks, that there's a 70% failure rate. So as much as any provider can do a great job during the 15-minute visit that they are with the primary care provider, or during the 4 hours that they're sitting in the emergency room, or during the 2-day stay in the hospital, that's still a very, very small part of the life of a child who's managing asthma. And we wanted to figure out how we can help with that piece about when they go home, because that's their real life, and that's the part that's going to keep them out of the hospital, which is where we don't want them. So our implementation of the program, like I said, we decided there were a lot of different ways you could have done it. You could have thought about it. So some people did workshops. Some people did series of workshops or lectures or all-day events. We decided that what we wanted to do was to touch people more often. Rather than having like one really big 4-hour or 6-hour thing, we wanted to maybe have a couple of hours every month that we were touching people's lives, or even a couple of minutes every month that we were touching people's lives, so that it was spread through time. So we used a mentor program. It started off with a mentor training. So we trained members of our chapter, taught them about asthma, taught them about the challenges that asthma parents face, taught them about disparities in asthma, and talked about how they could be mentors and coaches. And then we had kickoffs with the families, where they got to meet the person who was going to be assigned to be their mentor, and they got to learn a little bit about the asthma program. They got to hear some testimonials from parents who had been successfully participating in other mentoring programs. And then we did a baseline survey so we could see what challenges these families were facing. After that, we did monthly calls for 6 months. So every month, the mentor called the parent. And this was very sort of combination high-touch, high-tech. So some people did phone calls. Some people did emails. Some people did text messages. Some people met at McDonald's for coffee. Whatever worked for the mentor and the parent was the way they made that monthly contact. And then our evaluators kept a log of how often they were able to reach their person, when they met them, and what they did with them. And then after about 6 months, we did a wrap-up outcomes assessment. For our inclusion, we looked at parents, mostly mothers, but we had a couple of fathers, of a child between the ages of 3 and 11 that were English-speaking and were referred by one of our local partners. So Ms. Leith talked about a lot of our national partners, but every chapter that did this program also developed local partnerships on the ground to help them be successful. So our local partners were Partners for Kids, which is a Medicaid accountable care organization, so an insurance company, basically, that wanted the kids to stop wasting money on hospital care and to be healthy, Franklin County Head Start, and a local elementary school near our hospital. And our target was 50 families. And, you know, we started off making sure that everybody knew what their job was, what their roles and responsibilities are. So the hospital, who was our primary partner, understood that their role was to help us to identify families to participate in the program, to provide the doctors and nurses and nurse educators who would be the second line of contact after the lay mentors, to also provide support when there was a need for a referral to be available to our population, to provide the IRB for the research component. And they also helped us with providing money for incentives and other sorts of in-kind support. The sorority, on the other hand, was responsible for getting the boots on the ground. So we had to find the mentors. We had to get them to make the commitment to participate. We had to get them to make the commitment to document and do all the training associated with it. So everybody knew what their job was. And the timeline, we won't go into that. These are pictures from our first mentor orientation. So we trained over 30 chapter members to be mentors in 2 different sessions, done in combination with clinicians and asthma educators from Nationwide Children's Hospital and several of the clinicians in our chapter and myself put together this process, which really engaged a lot of people, and we were excited about that level of engagement. Each mentor got a handbook, which included a letter from the chapter president thanking them for engaging. There was a contract that said, if you're going to be a mentor, this is what you promise to do. You promise to contact your person monthly. You promise to keep documentation. You promise to keep anything that happens on the telephone or in your conversation confidential. You promise not to get into these people's lives. Your job is to talk to them about asthma. They start talking to you about other things other than telling them, you know, here's a resource for you. You're not telling them how to parent. You're not telling them how to run their lives. So that was in the contract. We had the slides from the webinars. So as Dr. Adams and Ms. Leaf talked about, there were a lot of national educational materials, and we shared that in our local documents. We also had things like medication instruction sheets, so if a parent were to ask about a medicine, they were able to refer to that. There were monthly scripts, so they would know what the message was that they were supposed to deliver each month, and then the documentation forms and other resource guides. So we had like probably 10 or 15 pages of resource guides just if they said, we need an air conditioner, or we need a fan, or we need an exterminator, or all these other things, we had resources for those problems should they arise. So the monthly message scripts were adapted from the curriculum. So we had the big curriculum that had all the things to cover. We took that and sort of squished it down into monthly messages and reviewed those messages with our physician team and our asthma specialists so that they made sure the language was appropriate as we started squishing stuff. And we really made clear that the scripts were a guideline for a conversation. They weren't supposed to read the script. They were supposed to have a discussion around the material that was in the script. And the topics we covered are things like spacer use, cigarette smokes, remembering to refill your meds, using your controller meds, checkups, allergy meds, managing heat, and ozone action day. So those are some of the topics that were covered. So a sample script looked like this. So have you been able to identify and remove asthma triggers? You know, things that cause asthma attacks are called triggers. Triggers are everywhere. So these were sort of the things you were supposed to work into your conversation, but not actually read this verbatim when you called them. Then after we had the trainers all trained up and they had all their documentation and everything, we brought in the youths and families. We did an asthma one-on-one workshop. And each participant received a tailored education packet. They got a spacer. They got information about the specific meds they were on. We had a total of four sessions, two at Children's Hospital and two at an elementary school nearby. So our project was relatively small, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But we included 13 parents, all of whom were officially mothers. We had some fathers who were with the mothers. We didn't have any fathers who were standalone. Girls and boys. Racially balanced. The elementary school that we worked with is actually in a very low-income, predominantly white part of town, so that was where most of the white kids came from. The African-American kids were mostly from another part of town nearby, and the grades were sort of mixed through the group. And in terms of our implementation effective measures, so we want to see, can this work? So it was our goal to recruit 25 mentors. We got 26. Yay, us. Our goal was to recruit 50 families. We got 13 parents of 15 children. We had so many orientations where we had 20 people who were scheduled to come and three showed up. And these families are living in tough situations. They have a lot going on. And even though we had food and even though we had child care, it was still a struggle to get to an orientation, to get this settled. You know, these kids aren't struggling with their asthma just because it's their asthma. They're struggling with their asthma because it's their life. And so that was a challenge that we lived with. And our goal, so there was supposed to be six monthly goals. Our goal was to make sure our mentors got in touch with people at least five times. Actually, it ended up being an average of three times, which was lower than we wanted, but we had phones shut off, we had emails shut off, we had people who moved, we had a person who died, we had a lot of stuff. So, but the actual number of parents who were retained through the 6 months are who we were able to get back at the end and actually do the closing interview. Our goal was 90, and we got 84, so not terrible. When we looked at our outcomes, we didn't really have a big effect on symptoms. And this, because our numbers were so small, we couldn't do a seasonal adjustment, so I can't really say anything about the symptoms change. But what I was excited about was when we looked at some of the self-efficacy measure changes. So when we asked them whether or not they were sure that they could stay calm after having participated in the program, we saw a notable increase in that, or believing that they can prevent a serious breathing event from occurring, or knowing that when they should go to the ED. So there was an improvement in knowledge and self-efficacy, which was really where we were more likely to have an impact than actual symptoms themselves. And we've had a great opportunity to share what we've done in a number of different conferences and meetings over the past couple of years, because we think that there's no point in doing this if we can't replicate it and spread it and share it. Our lessons learned, working with hard-to-reach populations is actually hard. You know, the doctors are struggling with these patients, lay mentors are struggling with these patients. But the problem, the reality is they need all of that. They need all that constant attention just to get to where we can get to success. Partnerships are key. You know, when we're talking about a community service organization, our chapter in Columbus has about 230 members, which is a relatively large chapter, not a huge chapter, but a relatively large chapter, but still does not have a ton of money to spend on projects like this. So all kinds of in-kind support from people who were able to help us have food at the meetings or have babysitters at the meetings or have videos for the kids made a big difference. Because even volunteer projects cost money. So as much as we wanted to be able to say that, you know, we've got these volunteers, they're mentoring, they're giving their time, there's still costs associated with printing flyers and printing the educational binders. There's still costs associated with having food at the orientations. There's still costs associated with incentives for the parents. So you still have to find ways to have money even when the project is 100% volunteer. Sustainability is difficult in a problem of the month culture. You know, we have a lot of things. They change a lot of times. Whatever people's energy is takes away from being able to really keep something like this happening. But we can be successful in a project like this, and we are excited about what we did and happy to share it with you. So that's what I have. Thank you. Questions? Yes. Okay, well, I'll talk to that real quick and then let Dr. Adams talk to it. So, for example, I was the asthma ambassador for the Great Lakes region. So what that meant was I was responsible for interacting with the asthma committees in Ohio, Michigan, West Virginia, Western Pennsylvania, Western New York. So what we would do is have meetings with the health chairs from all of the chapters in that region to say, what challenges are you running into with implementing the program? And so somebody else could say, oh, yeah, we ran into that challenge, but we were able to find a partner at this church that gave us space. Or, you know, check with your local American Lung Association. They might be able to give you a speaker if you're not having any luck getting a speaker from another organization. So what we did was we had meetings about quarterly with our that covered all of our programs, but I focused on talking about the asthma program so that people could share. Then we also would do that at our regional conferences. So we have regional conferences on an annual basis. So one of the things we would do at a regional conference is give people an opportunity to share their exemplary programs with the other chapters in the region so that we could get lessons learned that way.